you know, he's going to veto it, then it'll go back, and then we'll see if there are the votes to override his veto.
No way. They're not going to get enough votes. They're not going to get enough votes to override it. The veto's going to run. But they don't do that right either. But that's a thing. The Congressional Budgetary Office doesn't even agree that they do that right, because they're putting a bunch of stuff into programs. They're front-ending things with no type of funding 3-4 years down the road.
What up, world? Welcome to the 77th episode of the Amera Podcast.
Sure.
I'm your host, Blake Mannion. Today is Thursday, March 14th, 2019. We're recording this episode at 6:30. And we've got on live today. We're doing it live.
It's not going to be live by the time you all listen to it, but it's live for us. Our experience is live.
That's right. John Anderson in the mountains, Colorado. Hello there.
How are you? Hey. How is everybody?
Tyler Grillo out in California. What up, sir?
Hey, hello.
And John Kelly.
Hello, sir.
Also in Colorado. You like how I'm just jumping around?
Jumping around. Doing well. Glad to be back. Sorry I missed the Freedom episode. But I'm glad to be back.
Oh, yeah. You did miss the Freedom episode. That's because you were on a super secret mission for Freedom.
I'm always all about the Freedom. My Freedom intensifies all the time. Always.
Like an exponential curve.
That's how it works. It's the only way it works.
John, do you survive the Arctic blast up there in Evergreen?
We got like a foot. It was pretty cool. Like, it was when they said blizzard, they weren't kidding, but it was like legitimately a blizzard. But Abby was super into it, so it was a great success.
Love it.
That's great. Dogs love snow.
Oh, she loves snow. Except, well, it doesn't matter.
Hashtag dogs love snow. Hashtag off topic. All right.
Hashtag off topic.
Hashtag guardrails.
So today we're going to talk about two things specifically. We're going to discuss the new budget the Trump administration has proposed. And we are also going to talk about the resolution to overturn Trump's national emergency declaration. Kick it off, huh, with Trump's budget.
Spoiler alert, it sucks.
Yeah. Numbers, so sexy. Budgets, I love it.
Right? Apparently, it's going to cut into our Medicaid. It's going to cut into our national emergency budget.
So it's $4.7 trillion in total, which is a humongous amount, and we should note that for a conservative with humongous quotation marks on it administration.
What makes it so absurd is that it's the largest budget ever proposed after a bunch of tax cuts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the classic kind of conservative talk points where it's we have to cut social safety net issues that are unpopular with their base, what they deem entitlements to people that are on them, while beefing up basically national security, which, by the way, is also a mess inside of the budget, but we can get to that in a second.
And interestingly, one of the things that distinguished Trump during both the primary and the general election was that he was not for cutting Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security. It was unclear if he knew exactly what that meant, but that was one of the things.
Like many of the things that come out of his mouth.
If you're an honest conservative, you're like, hey, I don't think the government should be handling this money, so I want to give tax cuts to Americans. And then also, I care about the budget being sound, so we have to cut services as well. And so what Donald Trump's magic was, hey, we're going to give you tax cuts and give you all the stuff too, and it's going to be awesome. And that was great for campaigning, but it's not realistic because math.
Right.
So the way they're like balancing all that is they're making massive cuts to things like Medicare and Medicaid.
Yeah, but the cuts won't even support the increase, will it?
No, we're also going to run a humongous fucking deficit, which is hilarious because Republicans lit their hair on fire for 6 years about deficits under the Trump administration, or I mean the Obama administration, after not caring about it during the Bush administration and not caring about it during the Trump administration.
Yeah.
So I've heard some conservatives argue that, like, there's nothing wrong with running a deficit.
Yeah, so there's this thing that I'm not well versed in called modern monetary theory, MMT. And it's basically like the government. Okay, this is probably wrong, but my
is that the idea of just print more money?
Essentially, yes.
In a way,
it's okay. Essentially that like the government can just print money however they fucking want, and so. And it doesn't really matter because it's all made up anyways. And right. So, like, let's just pump all this energy into the economy and people will eventually win. I listened to an interesting debate where it's more like when there are certain economic conditions met in terms of, like, the interest rate and unemployment and things like that, it makes sense to just pump money into the economy, but there will be diminishing returns. So, for example, in this economy, it makes a lot less sense because we're at 3.9% unemployment or whatever the fuck. But in 2008-09 or, you know, 1939, it makes a lot of sense because there's a lot of, like, slack in the economy. And so if you get that slack out of there, you'll see a better economy go.
Well, and you're 100% right, and it's taking a kind of neoliberal economic approach, which was what John Maynard Keynes during World War II and during the Depression, which is what John was referring to, and saying that part of GDP, which is the gross domestic product of a country, is governmental spending. So if you increase governmental spending and you pump more into the economy that way, whether it's through jobs, whether it's through tax cuts, that's another way you can do it economically. But that stimulates people spending more within the economy, which then boosts the GDP.
Right. The biggest issue I see if you start printing money is, doesn't that dilute the pool generally? So would that reduce the worth of the dollar?
Hashtag Venezuela.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
so
if you're Zimbabwe in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
So that's inflation, right? And that can be a problem. I don't understand all the nuances, but I think MMT would say, like, that matters less.
Our economy is way too strong to have inflation at that level. The kind of hyperinflation where, like, a loaf of bread would cost $1 million.
Yeah, we're not going to be Venezuela. That's, yeah.
Well, okay, so do they start cutting from the budget that we have access to now? Or is that where the cuts are coming from? How are they related,
I guess? So the debt, what it would be is that we do this because we spend more than we take in taxes and revenue and whatever. We run a deficit, right? Which means that we have a credit card for the country and we keep running debt. But we have this law that says once you get to X number of debt, the Congress has to authorize more debt. And if we don't do that, it would be like the same thing if you tell your credit card company, I'm not going to pay you anymore. And they would be like, well, you have $10,000 on your credit card.
It's more akin to, I know I'm going to spend $11,000 this month, so I am going to increase my spending limit to $1,000. And the bank goes, okay, you could increase it to 10,
right.
That's fine.
But what happens if we don't do that is you basically tell the credit card company, I'm not
going to
pay this.
I'm going to default. I'm going to default on my
own. And so then, you know, they can do things like take your car or whatever to settle that debt. But the United States of America's government is the bedrock of the global financial system. It's everything is based on the U.S. dollar. And so if the bedrock of the global financial system says we're not going to pay our debts, it's going to be an economic catastrophe.
Right. Yeah. If our debts are no longer worth anything to us, if we're going to purposely default on them and say that we're not going to pay anything, then all the bonds that we sell to people no longer have any meaning to them. The debt that we hold from other countries still basically doesn't mean anything, because if we're not going to recognize our own debt, they don't have to recognize their debt. It crashes the entire financial system that runs the global economy. If U.S. governmental bonds aren't a AAA rated bond, even if they go to like AA, we're screwed on a financial system. If we're talking about defaulting, screwed. That means that they're basically like not even a B rating bonds if we're saying we're just not even going to do it, period. So yeah. It's interesting, because I think that the MMT that you're talking about, it just takes into account that we'll just continue to grow the deficit, and we'll just keep pushing the debt ceiling because it doesn't really matter. If the debt ceiling is basically an imaginary number built off of an imaginary financial system, which I happen to think that it is, you can just push it and push it, and there's no real repercussions there. Because again, who's gonna call us on it anyway, right? Who's gonna call the United States and say pay your debt?
Right, exactly. It's almost the opposite of the only thing you have to fear is fear itself. Whereas, like, the only thing MMT would say, I think, the only thing that can, like, cause you to freak out about the deficit is you freaking out about the deficit. Which is to say, like, all of the global financial system is just made up fairy nonsense that we all agree is a real thing, and therefore it's a real thing.
If we were to, in theory, just start... Let's say we funded a UBI, universal basic income, based off of funding from just printing more money.
It's possible that it would work.
Yeah,
it's just once you get into like an unlimited set of money that you start dealing with like this idea of hyperinflation, because then our markets aren't strong enough to compete with foreign markets if we're flooding our own with too much extra money, because then all of the goods that we import don't actually cost the same amount.
Right, it destroys like what people value or what the worth is of these goods and services.
Yeah,
but then aren't we heading in towards like, this is a little tangential, but almost like more of a socialist at that point, where like money isn't an object. If we're just printing it, it's not really valuable. So just get rid of those institutions and then just make them free.
Well, no, I think we're already there, but you can't get rid of the institutions. Like we're already there. Your credit card is just a made up piece of plastic, right? But the world functions on that. But you can't get... Like, if you got rid of the credit card company tomorrow, there would be problems.
Definitely.
Which is getting rid of the institution, right? So,
well, yeah, that would come first, necessarily.
The fairy tale has to be real.
That would come, like, later, I guess is what I'm saying. But that's, like, that's a weird, strange reality, perhaps.
Yeah.
Tyler?
Oh wait, yeah. I just want to say that the thing, it's like oh, we could just like make up more money. It's like, it's true, but all economies as they exist now are based on two things: labor and resources, right? And so what's assumed in all of this is, because now that there's no gold standard anymore, there's no like physical standard, you can just print money. But the thing is that in all of the things that the money is going to invest in all of the things that the money is purchasing, are still extracting labor and resources. And because we don't have a sustainable, since the way that we get our resources are not sustainable, that what's happening through this system is we're destroying the planet. So like conceivably, if we had endless renewable resources, yeah, we could just print money. But what's actually happening is, the more and more money gets printed, is that we're actually extracting more and more resources from the environment, and eventually that will collapse. So it's like, yeah, we could just keep printing money, but then there will just be like no, there'll be no oil anymore to buy with that money. There will be no trees anymore to build houses with that money if we keep going on the same
path. Right. It's a bubble, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly why I was saying that it's made up before. It's not because I agree with kind of the new money stuff that we were talking about before. Yeah. The reason I don't believe in it is because the economics that we base our system around, the capitalistic system, everything that comes from nature is an externality that doesn't matter in the equation. So when you're talking about how we gain products and how they're sold on a market, makes no difference if there's – it assumes that all resources are unlimited resources. And that's a problem because not everything is.
That's
it's a fundamentally
point.
Flawed system at the bottom when you think about it.
Great. So we're all going to be underwater soon and let's all move to Canada.
Yeah, literally. Yay.
Well, you already are born with debt in this country, from my understanding.
Yeah. Thanks, baby boomers.
Well, there's a lot of countries you're born with debt as a citizen.
Shall we move on to discuss some of these cuts that are happening? What this might mean for people.
Yeah.
Like, I know how Medicare is going to be a huge one, which really doesn't make sense to me that he, after his base especially, has put up such a concern for losing their Medicare that he would go through with something like this.
I mean, it makes sense to me given to who he's surrounded himself with and who his closest people are around him. It's pretty classic Republican dogma that you have to cut entitlements from people. You know, part of this new budget proposal is that he's still doing some of the stuff that he promised he would do in the last State of the Union, right? He's putting money towards research for AIDS and for childhood cancer. The problem is that he's cutting the system that people need to get to those services. So he's like putting money into research to help find a cure, but he's cutting the funds that poor people will need to get there to even see a doctor to get those cures.
And like, I think the way that you explained it is Donald Trump has a couple of different constituencies, one of which is like Fox News watchers, which is like, you know, white people who probably used to work in a factory who are getting older. But also another one of his major constituencies is like terrible corporations. And so terrible corporations want to see these cuts, I think, more than like the people who these cuts are going to be affected. So this is this is him balancing out those two constituencies. And it helps when you have Fox News that can basically be like, they're not cutting Medicare and Medicaid and it's fine. And people will be like, great.
Until they lose their care.
And
care, but then they'll blame the Democrats because the Democrats took over the House.
Yeah. People will be pissed about it. And some people in those constituencies who are affected are like losing, you know, Trump's losing some support there. But the unfortunate reality is that with like all of these things, they're going to scapegoat a population. What's probably continuing with the immigrant population from the southern border, they're going to be like all of these, you know, people coming from the south are taking advantage of Medicaid. They're, you know, they're illegal and they're taking advantage of Medicaid. So actually it's fine because once we build the wall and they stop coming, we're not going to have as much pressure on Medicaid, which of course is total bullshit because even if you fucking don't have papers, you still pay taxes. So that's not true at all. But, you know what I mean? They're going to scapegoat also with all of this, right? Or like John says,
totally. It's really interesting when you look at some of the statistics. When you look at illegal immigrants come in, they're not the ones that are abusing the Medicaid and Medicare system. It's usually their children that are technically abusing the system because they haven't paid into it yet. But their parents are paying into it. Their parents don't actually go to a lot of places because they're illegal and they don't have papers to get in to even claim that they have those benefits.
Yeah.
So it's a moot point. It's a generational thing. And that difference is still there. It's definitely still there if you look at it statistically. But I agree that it's an easy scapegoat and an easy talking point for Republicans to use when they start slashing Medicaid and then say the real problem is that somebody else is taking it anyway. You know, so
what they're really doing is just confusing the entire reality of the situation and how to make it work better.
I don't
think that this is like they're not honest actors in trying to make government function better. And actually there's a lot of stupidity in this document. Like, for example, they do things like give a lot of funding to cancer treatment and then they cut more from that treatment center's overall budget in the budget
itself. That's what I was saying.
So they, it was, and so you're just like, you know, I think it's really emblematic of the, there's no strategic oversight to this administration whatsoever. It's like, we just have a laundry list and we're going to check these boxes and we don't care if they talk to each other. And that's a terrible, terrible way of governing any large organization, which is another indication that Donald Trump is a terrible businessman and probably not a billionaire, but that is an aside. So just about the only thing in this budget that they increase spending for is defense.
But they don't do that right either.
There's another
But that's the thing. The Congressional Budgetary Office doesn't even agree that they do that right, because they're putting a bunch of stuff into programs. They're front-ending things with no type of funding 3-4 years down the road. Basically,
Callie, listeners, Callie sent a great article to our Slack chat by Corey Shockey in the New Yorker that just came out, and I would suggest everybody go take a look at it. A really good phrase she used in there is they're basically giving the Pentagon a sugar high, which is also what they did with the tax cut. It was a sugar high. It's not sustainable. It's bad policy, and it was all built on winning a news cycle or winning an election cycle, and that's not a good way to make policy in the ostensibly the greatest country ever to exist in the world.
So does that include the budget for the wall?
There's another $8.6 billion of funding in there for the wall, because of course there is.
So that's in addition.
Yeah.
And isn't that 8.6 like 2 or 3 billion more than what?
Yeah, he wanted 5.7, I think.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly. So here's the thing, though, is neither of those numbers are actually going to build all the wall he wants. I completely agree with Ezra Klein's theory that he doesn't want a border wall. He wants a fight about a border wall.
I totally agree.
Right.
But to play devil's advocate, John, wouldn't a giant gold Trump look pretty good going across the wall? Don't you think that's why he needs the extra money? So you could just write that on the wall?
That's true. That's a good point. It would be good. You know, the other thing about this budget that is just always worth, like, because this fucking happens. This is true, I think, of his budget proposals when he was running as well, is that it assumes a 3% growth in the economy. Which is absurdly high.
Not a sustainable growth rate.
Nobody is predicting.
Nobody thinks that. Like, even if you look at how bullshit everything else is, even it's predicated on that, and there's no way that's going to happen.
Tyler's 100% correct. If you look at circles of economists and people that are really connected into how democracy works with an economy that's healthy, this is the biggest issue in the United States currently. Basically, the entire second half of the 20th century was built off of 3 or more % growth rates every year, sustainably year to year. And it's not that. We don't live in that kind of world anymore, where the growth and production of resources can reach us to 3 to 5% year to year. Maybe if we change some of the things, like if we look at AOC's new Green Deal and we tax a bunch of people and create new jobs for a larger percentage of the population, you might be able to get to that growth. But it's still questionable. Very questionable.
So this
we would need almost like a boom in the energy industry. Right?
Renewable energy. So it's really interesting. There's a mystery in economics, which is we have all of these things increasing over the last, say, 50 years, but production hasn't necessarily increased at the same rate, I believe is what it is. And that's weird because you see a lot of other things doing it. And I think one of the reasons why is we haven't, like, the breakthrough from not airplanes to airplanes is bonkers. The breakthrough from a personal computer to an iPhone, pretty bonkers, but not like flight to not flight. And so it could be that we
if we're talking about it, like horse to steam power to gas power, right?
Basically, like there was a greater rate of innovation was more innovative back in the day.
Nice.
And so that's why we saw, right? So that's why we saw, like, greater increases in, say, the human condition. However, it could be that we're at a bottleneck period right now. These things aren't all linear, and we have some shit coming our way that could completely blow everything out of the water, like genetic modifications and AI and nanotechnology. If you combine all of those things together, we might see another explosion where we end up like having really high growth rates. But also the other problem with that is, how do you make it sustainable? And so it could, Tyler, what you're saying is accelerate the global catastrophe that seems to be coming our way when we run out of resources and Florida's out of water.
And that's assuming too that America's the leader in that boom, right?
No, not necessarily. No, that's a global thing. Not necessarily.
That was a global that's basically relevant to the global economy, is what I would say.
It's, mm-hmm. Yeah, so all you techies out there, fucking give us like teleportation and vacation space travel. Right.
So that's... I actually think teleportation would make the world a terrible place.
You're no fun, John. Don't you want to go to the moon whenever you want? I do.
Well, just thinking of the like ways to misuse teleportation, this is a huge tangent, but like, holy fuck. The thing that would be really great is if we got like cold fusion or something like that, or could power everything off of hydrogen. That's my dream.
Yeah.
Or just invent time travel, and then you can travel back to like, you know, millions of years ago before there were humans and just extract all the resources from there. Oh, turns out that the dinosaurs died because we time traveled back there and fucked it up too.
But then what does that do for your future?
I think one of the benefits of Donald Trump is that he proved time travel isn't real. Because, like, that's what you come back in time to fix, right?
No, John, the election. It's not
doesn't
the time
Hitler
travel
already prove that? Doesn't Stalin already prove that in the 20th century? I mean...
No, you guys. Don't you know anything about time travel? Don't you guys know anything about time travel? God,
no,
you guys
there are
worse.
Different
you
theories.
You can't affect your own timeline. You can only
about
start...
time travel and how it works when you go back and change stuff about history. There's different theories, but we don't... Do you guys want to get into this? Do we want to get into it?
So we're assuming the
you
multiverse.
You can only create a new timeline.
Right?
That's why the multiverse exists.
Okay, all right. Fine. Assuming the multiverse, I'm wrong.
Yep, okay, yeah.
And Kelly, to answer your criticism, my time is the most important time in the history of all time, so therefore Donald Trump.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. But I will say that it's a pretty deep point that we are joking about right now, that there is a lot of hope both economically and environmentally that is pinned to our ability to produce technology that will help us into our increased computation rate and our increased ability to work in technology. So something to think about if you want to stay up at night. It's a frightening topic.
It's almost as like as we innovate and create things that are the betterment of all people, it's almost like that also helps our economy. Weird. Strange.
Yeah, but I don't think the people in charge are interested in helping out everybody else, unfortunately.
Yeah,
I mean,
at least they
I think some
want
are and
books.
Some aren't. We shouldn't, you know.
Sure, I guess
eat
by
the, rich,
the people in people in charge, I mean the Trump administration.
Oh, who got rebuked today? Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And, yes, and, they did.
And speaking of people in charge, we did come together to that both Democrats and Republicans. Well,
we all come together over Trump being a fucking idiot.
I mean, it's amazing that it had to take this to get here. Republicans to vote against him. Well, actually, there were some other ones. They voted to help the Saudi Arabia over Yemen.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's true.
They also voted 420-0 to make sure that the Mueller report was publicly available when it
Holy,
comes out.
Wow, mm-hmm. Really?
And that's,
wow.
Are you talking the Senate?
No, that's the House.
The House. Right.
420, huh?
To nothing.
Sounds like everybody reefed it up that day.
Yeah.
Whoa, there's nothing in that
the chambers,
report,
baby.
Bring it on.
So what we're talking about is the fact that the Senate just today passed a resolution to overturn Trump's national emergency declaration.
Right.
Which
to build the wall.
Yeah.
Which is why he declared it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ann Coulter.
Yeah. And, you know, he's going to veto it.
For sure.
And then it'll go back, and then we'll see if there are the votes to override his veto.
No way. They're not going to get enough votes. They're not going to get enough votes to override it. The veto's going to run. I'm calling it now. Yeah. I don't know where you guys stand, but that's where I stand on it.
No, 100%. You know why? Because they didn't get Cory Gardner, they didn't get Ben Sasse, and they didn't get...
Fucking Cory.
One other person who you would expect to vote... against this, possibly. So those people aren't going to change their minds, and they're moderates. So,
but it also has to get 2/3 of both chambers.
Yeah, they have 59 votes in the Senate. I don't know what the House breakdown was.
The House isn't at 2/3 either. The House isn't at 2/3.
Yeah. Yeah, we would need 8 more senators. So the vote, or 9 more senators.
The vote today in the Senate was 59 to 41.
Yeah. So yeah. You would need 9 more senators to override a veto, which is not going to happen because they are going to get primaried if they do it. Because the Republican Party is not a healthy institution. But we should point out Marco Rubio grew a spine.
Mm-hmm.
Mitt Romney actually made a moral decision. Rand Paul was able to recover from his getting the crap beat out of him by his neighbor over like something to make the vote.
Mowing his lawn or something like that.
Yeah. One of the best stories in the last, in like the Trump era. Lisa Murkowski, who is awesome generally. Susan Collins, who we have feelings about. You know, and some other ones. Good for them. Like, that was, I think, I wanted this vote to happen because I don't think either president should have the right to do this. I don't think that a Democratic president should have the ability to come into office and on day one declare a national emergency over, you know, global warming or guns, even though I think they have a much better reason to do either, because I don't think that it's healthy to have that much power in the executive. We fought a war over this and we beat the British, so we shouldn't have to do it again.
I agree 100%, John, and that's what we're looking at if he gets away with this, is that basically if Trump cannot get a group of people to bend to his will, and something that he tried somewhat for, but cared more about tax breaks when he actually controlled the House and the Senate, now pushes for when there's other people controlling one of the other branch or parts of one of the other branch and he can't get his way, that's not what that emergency powers was listed for. It's not the reason that it was written in the first place. Certainly not the reason that it just somebody basically licking their wounds about not being able to pass something. It's not supposed to be how this works.
And so, and that said, Kelly, wouldn't that make this an abuse of power?
100%. I absolutely think it's an abuse of power. But again, when you're looking at it, the powers that they're granted, the only check on him currently is the Congress. And so that, and interestingly, that's what Mitch McConnell came out and said. He's like, I'm going to still vote for it because in my mind, it's still well within the rights that were written into law for the emergency powers. And if we as a body want to do something about it, we should amend it. We shouldn't, we should veto, even though he didn't vote to veto Trump. His idea is that we need to come together as a body and change the rule because it is a rule in law that they signed into law, right? So,
speaking of Mitch McConnell, real quick, did you hear his quote about "I'm the one who decides what we vote on"?
I mean,
it's not wrong.
Probably not untrue.
No, it's not untrue. It's not. That's factually true.
Yeah,
it's kind of his whole job.
Like, okay,
really.
We know you're thinking it. Did you have to say?
Yeah, he gets to decide what bill is coming before, which is interesting why he allowed this bill to come to the floor, because he knew the Republicans were going to vote against it, and it's a deliberate middle finger to the president.
Yeah, he's...
Sorry, Kelly, I think I interrupted you a little bit.
Oh, no, you're good. I was going to say, just for our listeners who haven't thought about that type of structure that happens in Washington, D.C., and some of the positions of real power that are there, Mitch McConnell is sitting in one. The idea that you can stop a bill that other people have written that are brought from other people that have backings for thousands of people around the country, it's a very important piece of power that's there. Just so people understand exactly what he means by that, that's what he means by that. He worked his ass off to get there. Now he's enjoying the fact that he can pick and choose which bills go in and which don't.
And to put that in context, I think that Mitch McConnell has been worse for America's democracy than Donald Trump.
Yeah, the long-term effect is much more than Donald.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, this also gets it. We don't have to go down this rabbit hole. This is far, but
Merrick Garland.
Carl Rove.
Bad rabbit hole.
But it, okay. But it reminds me of something I saw. And I mean, okay, you win whoever decided to put this on. But it was like, oh, Jennifer Lawrence wants to tell me something. What do you want to tell me, Jennifer Lawrence? And she wanted to tell me about how our system is broken. And one of the stats was so, like, I was somebody, it was either a Yale or Harvard study, I forget. And like, you know, stats, so who knows? But like the it was an amazing stat where it was the chance of a bill, of a law, basically a law being passed, right? Like, so that means making it through everything, getting signed, like a law in the federal government becoming a law. If it has support from 0% of the American of United States citizens, it has a 30% chance of passing. If it has a 100% support from the United States citizens, it has a 30% chance of passing. There, and in between, there's no variation. Regardless of the support from American people,
right,
like,
because it's
actual
inside
laws.
It's inside politicking. That's how that stuff gets passed on the national level.
But it's
level.
Like, I would assume, not knowing, like, I'd be like, I mean, you know, maybe there's like a 5%, you know, maybe there's some fluctuation. And it was like, no, there's no fluctuation.
Yeah, that's
it. It doesn't
matter. Really interesting. I would like to see that. I would definitely like to see the stats
that.
Because
it's a stat that I saw, and I didn't like read the report of the exact thing, but it's something like, it just was, you were saying, like, you were kind of just talking about how it's like, yeah, because if Mitch McConnell doesn't agree with it, well, then we ain't, but, you know, then we ain't going to see it.
And a good on-the-ground example of that is gun legislation, which is like 157% of Americans believe in background checks, but we still can't get that fucking through because... Yeah. The NRA.
Yeah, exactly.
Though, did you guys see the newest ruling out of Connecticut about Sandy Hook today?
Oh, yes. Yeah, they can,
yeah,
they can sue.
That's a big deal. Like that a lot. Yeah, so a judge ruled that victims of gun violence can sue the gun manufacturers, which is a big deal. And in Colorado, a couple of Aurora theater victims tried to sue, but there was under Colorado law, but they failed. And then under that law, they had to pay damages to the gun manufacturers because they lost.
Basically for slander. Cause that's
yeah,
why
it was one of the most unjust pieces of nonsense I've seen in quite some time.
On the federal level, it was written into statute, I think mid Bush years. But basically it said that, gun manufacturers can't be sued by victims because they weren't the ones using the weapons. They just sold it to someone. It'd be like if a farmer sold someone, you know, a piece of corn and then he killed someone with a piece of corn. That's basically how the lawmakers looked at it, right?
Right, but it's like, what if you were the farmer and you knew that, like, you know, 10% of your corn was poisoned and was going to kill somebody, but you sold it anyways, you would be held liable for that shit.
And farmers are, yeah, held under some amount of, like, FDA regulation, right? So
yeah, there are regulations. Yeah. Wow. Almost like there should be regulations.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's a bad metaphor. It's a bad connection, for sure. But that's basically the way they thought about it when they passed that bill.
Right.
So what this is it's a rebuke on the federal court level of that, saying that they're absolutely responsible for it, and in a specific way that is actually important for law long term, which is that because what hopefully it will do is change the way that gun advertisers can advertise what they're doing, right? Because at a long term, what it is that gun manufacturers are pushing a certain message, and this may be one way that people who really want gun control can push against it, saying that you can't just go out and say that everybody who has a gun's a more manly man. It's what makes, you know, it's what makes masculinity. It's what makes family safer. It's what does this, because it's just not true across the board.
Right.
And there's no studies about it one way or the other because the NRA has blocked all that, but that's a different story. So I don't know. I thought it was really interesting, and I think it's a step in the right direction in terms of
and
gun control.
Totally. I think this is a good example of where So we in America believe that markets solve all problems, or at least we did believe that prior to 2008, right? But how do you expect the market to solve gun violence as a problem? It's actually doing the opposite. It's the market is driving more guns into the economy. And so by being able to sue gun manufacturers in the court of law, you start to affect the market, which is you price in this gun violence and you say, actually, it's going to cost you a fuck ton of money if people die, because it should cost you a fuck ton of money if your product is killing people. So it allows the market to work more efficiently to make people's lives better. And this is a good example of where the private and public sector can come together to hopefully create a better world, right? So just to advocate for like the public-private partnership, this is where it would make sense. And so another good example of that would be like children suing the federal government over climate change.
Right. Mm. Yeah.
Yep. Which is something, I think, a movement that is starting to bubble up. And yeah. So that
they
makes
found
sense
that they have standing in certain courts.
Yeah.
In certain courts, they have standing to do so.
Because there's definitely harm, right?
Yep.
So
irrevocable harm that'll be caused to their generation that the government doesn't give a shit about.
So it's a good thing that we're starting to price these things into the market a little bit.
Yeah.
So hooray for that, but we need to do way, 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 way better.
Yeah, agreed.
So you know what this whole conversation reminds me of? Just with the judicial system and people voting against corporations is tort reform. And I actually just watched a great documentary called Hot Coffee. It does an excellent job of explaining how our court system has got to the point that it is at now. Mm-hmm. Karl Rove had a lot to do with that. And the documentary does a great job explaining how important the judicial system is for citizens to seek justice in these kinds of events.
Yeah, it's a way to hold corporations accountable in for things that, you know, the market might not necessarily be doing that.
Torts are quite a bit different than this, but they're similar in the sense that...
Well, thanks for adding on an hour to the podcast so we can explain what that means.
Yeah, we should have four non-lawyers sit here and talk to people about torts. It's, it's probably the best thing we can do. We're gonna be spot on.
We did just do a seminar on MMT, so like, you know. Yeah.
You know what, listeners, why don't you go ahead and Google that and go down that rabbit hole yourselves and leave in the comments how your brain feels after that.
Yeah, it's called Hot Coffee. It's about torts. It's about Karl Rove. Quite exhilarating.
Yeah, classic Karl Rove move.
You guys, Karl Rove, I miss Karl Rove. Remember when he was the biggest problem we had to deal with?
I mean, I don't know. He's still, I don't know. I don't know. He's up
still
there.
I'm pretty sure he's still there. Yeah, pretty sure he's still there.
Is he on Fox? Is he still a commentator?
Oh, yeah. He still pops up to commentate on Fox for sure.
Does he? Do you guys remember when he had that meltdown on like in 2012? That was amazing. Google that.
All right. Well, hot coffee, listeners, you got your homework.
And we have reached the end of our podcast because we got to torts, and that is the punctuation on any
you
good
mean I
podcast.
Actually killed this podcast for once. I killed the pod. All right, everybody, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode. Leave us some feedback. Thanks, sure.
See you next time.
Godspeed, everybody. 77. My bad.
I think you should just start it again.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you should too. Hey, you guys, we have so many podcasts, we can't keep track of them.
That's good. That's a good problem.